sexy, spooky bones.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm drinking beer.
Two-Fist John over here.
It has nothing to do with drinking liquids, by the way. But we're not going to elaborate.
Yeah, you're... Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
I call it a long night. I mean, you're a longer walk home.
Yeah, your new... I have to talk to everybody about your newfound love for Negronis, which
they're so good. That I wanted to savor the flavor and just took like an hour to drink one.
Yeah, I thought when you told me I hate gin and I hate Negroni, I was like, no, I don't believe you. I'm going to force you to drink like, three different kinds of Negronis.
And you were just like, no, I think it's the Campari you don't like. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure it's the gin. It's something that's never been on my palate.
But I kind of got you to appreciate the strawberry Negroni.
Oh, the strawberry part of it was really, really good.
Yeah.
If I could eliminate the rest of the flavors, it would be perfect.
You see, you're a Negroni head now. Look at you. And welcome to the show. This week, we will review Two Evil Eyes. As always, y'all will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. And we're watching Season 2, Episode 7
of
Sucky Fugs, titled Belly of the Beast. Belly of the Beast. A little on the head. Little on the head. Little on the nose there. The tongue.
But Belly of the Beast is... there is a hardcore band called Gallows. Mm-hmm. Not from Texas. Not to be confused with that band. That band was fucking great. It's a British band. And they had a song called Belly... Oh, no. It's called Belly of the Shark. All right. Scratch it. We're done with the podcast. I fucked up.
Yeah, throw the episode out. Belly of the Beast. So now this is the follow-up to Boyd and Christy. It's the next day after, and they want to start looking at the ginger for some sort of
the
weapon. The grinning ginger. To start using him potentially as a weapon against the... They look like sea creatures, the faces.
They look a little bit like anglerfish, don't they?
Yes.
They got like a anglerfish, piranha style, like...
Yeah, because of all the teeth and the fucking...
The way the eyes look, which...
Yeah.
I'm assuming it is, like, just deteriorated body, but the teeth are weird.
Yeah, they do mention that because they do an autopsy. Christy, the, 2 month medical student did autopsy. What did she say? She said something to that effect, right? Like she only has some schooling.
What's even like dumber is it's something I didn't want to ever. Well, it's something I thought I wanted to see, but I did get to see in person was like what organs look like inside. And I can tell you right now, because I'm not going to be able to get that memory out of my head. Just looking at a photo of this guy's ribcage, I could not fucking call that that's a human. I'd be like, I don't know.
What? Yeah. Well, see, because one thing they don't explain is that they had to have crushed his ribcage, which they didn't do in this picture. So they do the autopsy, they open it up, just kind of explain it, and then they just like, they find all his dry organs and stuff. but Christy would need to look where they're looking at the angle they're looking at. They would have to have crushed the ribcage out, which they didn't do. They just like cut it and be like, look, everything's here. Christy, the medical student, and Boyd, and everyone's like, yeah, everything's here. And they were fishing around in there. Which actually was actually, to be fair, I know we're kind of giving it a hard time, but it was kind of like an intense moment because these things are fucking terrifying. And
yeah, and we half expecting it to come back.
Right, exactly.
But I did like fucking Harold Perrineau, just fucking world-class like actor, acting like she's like, oh my God. And he's like, what? I mean, what am I looking at?
Yeah. The honest reaction to the moment. Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's human. And he's like, it is?
He's just like looking at you. Sure.
You sure about that?
And, they find, they're frustrated because they don't have any, they're dry. It's completely dried out, all its innards. And then they're frustrated by that, only to, was it Christy that started pounding on it, or Boyd? And they ended up loosening up some sort of like,
it was Christy. She got frustrated because she wasn't able to find anything. A couple of these characters are being like real dramatic all of a sudden. And I don't know. We were briefly talking about this and I have like a couple of theories, like either the writing's just getting bad, which I'm sorry. Like that happens. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're running out of ideas. So they're making these characters a little more interesting. They're making them have like random mood swings, or this experiment thing that's going on is forcing these people to have these weird thoughts, or like, maybe they're pumping some sort of like fumes or whatever.
Puffing the paint. Yeah. Got it. Which ends up loosening up some sort of bile, gooey Gatorade looking bile. And they end up jarring it up as a potential weapon against these things in the future. So we'll kind of see the fallout of that.
Which, what happened to the wormy blood?
True. Well, the wormy blood is what killed them, right? So did they, with this bile, represents now part of the wormy blood, and that's what they weaponized? I mean,
I don't know, because that's not really how that works either. I don't really understand what's going on.
We're not doctors, right? Sorry to break it to everybody.
Not that whole part, but like also like Kenny's being like over dramatic about like, we shouldn't be opening this thing up. We shouldn't have it inside, blah, blah, blah. And after everything Kenny's been through, I'm wondering if he's just being dramatic because he just wants this thing gone, or is he a part of the experiment too? And he's not saying something.
I feel like what is happening with Kenny is that he feels, from his character's perspective, he feels he's betrayed because Boyd lied to him about his dad's death, and he's kind of, they're trying to portray it like he's a little bit antagonistic now, not in a like purposeful way, but just like acting irrational, which the way they're kind of doing it is, in one scene he's like part of the team, and in the next scene he's like, no, you can't do that, or like he's like purposely being like against things, which is supposed to show his, I'm assuming, his frustration, his like growing frustration with the people that he's trusted and cares about. Because right now he doesn't really have anybody, but I don't think it's quite coming off that way. If that makes sense.
For the most part, kind of annoying. Because
yeah, for true.
Like I hate when they add characters like that and things to it. Like, oh, this is spicing things up. I'm like, no, I'm just irritated and I'm not paying attention now.
Pretty much. And Christy. Are we going to talk about Christy's lame-ass haircut? I cannot take her seriously with this haircut she got from her former fiancé or whatever they are now.
Oh, and I so more people are starting to watch this show, which is fucking great.
Awesome.
I do want it to continue.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the main
season three is gonna go, I think.
Nice. One of the main comments I get, just because you're bringing up these two characters, is the reassurance that it's not just us being too judgy. there are a lot of actors on this show that are not very good.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
it's not just us. Yeah, no. Okay, good.
We all agree on the same things too. Like Harold Perrineau and what's her name? Donna. What's her name? Elizabeth Saunders.
Uh-huh.
Are fantastic. Is what we can all agree on.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Good. I mean, we're not crazy.
Scott McCourt is really good too. It's just like, yeah. You know, he's playing a weird like Arrested Development style character, not to be confused with the show, like the actual.
Yeah. He's was this episode? He and the little boy go looking for trees, and they're trying to see if things are moving. And he casually mentions that it's the trees are dying. Is that what he says?
Yeah, that the kind of like a seasons change or whatever that we're used to. He's like, but that doesn't happen here.
Everything kind of just stays the same, which makes sense. So
I'm wondering if they kill one of the thingies, the sucky fucks, and then a part of that world starts to die too.
That would make sense. That's the only thing that's changed.
Yeah.
Considerably.
Kind of my guess.
Makes sense. I mean, it tracks. What that, like, will mean, if true, is, like, a whole other thing, you know, like, to kind of...
Also, one of the characters finally mentioned things we've been talking about, where they're like, and if, you know, what Boyd is saying is, like, stuff we haven't even seen yet that exists out there, like, I think it's Donna says this, to what's her name, Ellis's...
Fatmia or something like that.
Yeah
because
she's pregnant, right? Oh, that's
she's preggers, that's the other one. Yeah,
and biologically she's not supposed to be able to bear children.
Yeah, what does that mean exactly?
My guess is either she doesn't have a uterus or I mean something to that effect, or the uterus doesn't work or something like that.
It's broken, tune up, change the oil. Kind of.
But that's kind of my guess. Like, I'm assuming something happened early on, or maybe we're missing something we don't remember from the first season. Or she probably mentioned something like that. So she shouldn't be able to be pregnant at all. So she's freaking out. And then that's when Donna kind of says, like, we've seen things here that don't make sense. We've seen so many things, and you're worried about this. And, you know, if what Boyd says is happening out there is happening, like, then we have to worry about trees that will throw you places you've never been before, and like I think she mentions the spiders too, and big spiders you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she finally says, like, but basically, what do you got to lose? Why don't you just have the baby? And she said, because what if this thing is fucking with me and blah, 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 this, like, I don't want that. And then she was like, but bear with me, but what if I'm right and you do have a baby? This is amazing. Which leads me to believe Donna's a bad person.
That would be an interesting twist, only because there's...
And the reason she's been so frustrated is because the experiment's kind of going sideways for her.
So I kind of feel like a couple things are happening here. Maybe I'm drawing conclusions too. They try to radio out, you know, Jim tried to radio out at the end of the first season, and then their crops die, right?
Yes.
One of these things dies, and suddenly the trees are fucking dying. She has a moment early this season where she's like, fuck you guys, I don't want to live here anymore. And now she's pregnant and has a reason to want to live, right? Because theoretically she has a kid. So it's kind of like they're kind of, somebody's manipulating the outcomes here, just, you know, tinfoil idea there.
That's kind of my guess. That's where I'm being led to believe this stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they shouldn't have tried to radio out. Which, yeah, now we even saw, what's his name, Randall, who's being a skeptic when it comes to, God, how do I remember, like, the new people's names? And I don't remember the fucking dad and the mom.
Jim and Tabitha.
Jim and Tabitha. And yeah. What's her name? Callie or whatever the fuck her name is. Like,
it's not Callie. It's the Yellow Jackets.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's Julie. I could not tell you who the son's name is either. Dude, don't even ask me. Don't even. Ethan. Ethan. No, yeah, there you go.
A boring ass family.
Boring ass. For reals. For reals.
But Jim kind of recruits Randall because Randall has a drone.
So Jim's up to his shit again, huh? So he's back to his shit.
He's like, oh, I made the antenna again inside of the RV that flipped over.
Mm-hmm.
And then they try to like raise the thing, but the drone only goes yay high before it stops.
Interesting. Yeah.
Also, Randall the entire time is like real skeptic. He's like, no, I'm with you. But like also, you know, is this shit real? Like maybe what you're saying is true. Like who else is in on it here? You got to have somebody inside to make sure things go right. Or go the way they're supposed to go. And
it's true.
He's like, oh, I don't know. And the whole time it made me think either like Randall is a part of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think so. I think Randall, but the thing is, he's got a military background, so it's a little sketchy.
Right, yeah.
Like, what if the drone going up, because I don't recall Jim grabbing the controls and trying to make it go higher. What if Randall's like purposely making it just stop right there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I almost want to say it went higher when you saw him flying the drone.
I think that's what they're going to try to attempt and probably succeed on some level. Other thing, Tabitha and Jude have kind of teamed up because they both are seeing shit. And, you know, those little pasty, gross, ghostly kids.
That's right. And everybody's starting to see the little ballerina box now.
Everyone's starting to see the battery in a box. Newcomer Christy had a dream or some sort of...
Yeah, it was like a nightmare where she's still going through withdrawals, but she sees the music box, which is, you know, like abnormal because she has no idea what the music box looks like. It's not like Boyd went into great description of what this music box looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And then she sees Boyd, and then she thinks she sees the grinning ginger in the back, but it's all like just a nightmare.
Right, and then in probably one of the most comical scenes ever ever happened on this show was Elgin is told by Julie to relax, and the way she relaxes by drawing a bath or some shit, right, and then sitting in water.
Oh, yeah, that was such a weird, like...
filthy, dirty water. So you're in... and then...
Like,
she...
and how old is Julie? Like, think of...
Yeah.
Think of the last person you talked to that's taken a bath.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's, like, something that died out. The idea of the bath. Maybe the I'm bath, wrong, yeah. Or maybe I'm just not privileged enough to have a fucking bath. Also, I hate the idea of standing water, but...
Yeah. I guess they're kind of still becoming friends.
Yeah, if Elgin survives, because there's quite a twist ending where he...
Is it?
he decides to draw his bath, and one of two things. Either the actor...
He bathes in his clothes.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say the actor is insecure, which is fine. I understand.
Yeah.
or it's another like dream sequence because I don't understand why he got in the tub fully clothed.
Right. Yeah.
It's really funny. Yeah, and then a random. I couldn't place what this. It's like another sort of sucky fuck, but not really. Right. It's more of like a
no.
Like
it's
a zombie-ish looking.
Yeah. Think like Day of the Dead, zombie.
Yeah, it the way it looks too also reminds me of something else we've seen before, and I just can't think of what it is.
Yeah, it's pretty in some sort of like summer clothes, and it seems to be.
No, it looks more like a kimono. So I'm wondering.
So okay, yeah, it looks like a kimono, black hair, dead,
and but still has all its hair completely black,
and is drowning Elgin, and that's how the show ends.
Yeah, which this thing looks like it's devoid of like any sort of water and muscle, like it's scrawny, but it's still drowning the shit out of Elgin. Which makes me think it's like a dream sequence.
Yeah, but who is it? Is that dead Julie or is that dead Fudmia?
Oh,
no. No. I think it's just something else, somebody else. I don't think we're going to lose either one of those characters anytime soon. So maybe this is part of Elgin remembering or something.
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, because we're like two episodes before the season's over, technically, right? Because I think it's only 9 episodes this season.
I don't know. I don't think we have any sort of clue of what that thing is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Also, because we keep getting introduced to like all these sucky fucks or just random looking people, including like, I mean, where's the buff milkman? Where do you go? where does a massive sucky fuck like that hide? You know, like. I wonder if he his feet kind of dangle out of the hole and he just kind of sleeps like that and then he like pushes himself back out.
He Winnie the Pooh's the hole. He can't get out. He's too buff. really dumb comical ending. Like I mentioned, only like 2 episodes left, I think, for the season. And something's got to give. We're going to learn something, right? We got to learn something in the next couple of episodes. So we'll see how this goes.
I sure hope so. Or maybe it's going to be even better. Every character is going to run into the tree and all get stuck in a well. It's gonna be like what is it, the Barrel of Monkeys game, right? You just pop it open and they all like
spill out,
hands like falling out. Yeah.
Alrighty. Do you have any other thoughts?
No. Excited to continue on so we can get past certain things already.
So yeah, so far season 2s have not been good to us.
That's because like our last episode was, I thought, fantastic.
Yes. Excellent. Yeah. Felt like a meaningful episode. This one was more mixed, I think. So.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Let's move over to our main review of Two Evil Eyes. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Drum roll, please.
I sure do. This movie came out in 1990, by the way.
Oh my god, are you serious?
Really bad for 1990.
Wow.
I'm gonna assume that they sat on it for a while. we'll talk about it in a sec. All right.
For 1990s, Two Evil Eyes. Coming in at number 3, freeze them, shoot them, become them, right? Wouldn't that make you want to watch the movie more than...
What's the tagline for this?
Whatever stupid... Yeah, honestly, who cares?
When I wake you, you'll be dead. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's totally the main point. It's the running theme.
Spoilers. When I wake up, you'll be dead, all right?
Maybe now I got to rewatch the film and understand that these all take big place within a week span, I guess, even though that doesn't check out.
Yeah, none of it does.
Coming in at number 2 for Two Evil Eyes. I think eyes were blind. That's just how I feel about the movie.
I was going to say.
And coming in at number 1 for Two Evil Eyes. Cat scratch fever, dum dum dum. All right, that's it.
All I got for that. Okay. Let me ask.
No, I didn't like it. Why?
Before we get there, are you a fan of Edgar Allan Poe?
Yes.
Okay.
Am I a fan of the seemingly the same exact story being adapted two different ways? Not really.
And so you've read some of his, short story work?
Sure have, yeah. Like the one about, what is it? The Hawk, right? Isn't that what it's called? I'm just kidding. So The Raven is a really good one, right? The Tale of Two Hearts. The Telltale Heart is another one. Maybe I mixed up the name.
Go ahead and
tear me apart in the comments below at our thread account.
I'm only familiar with whatever The Simpsons adapted. is that bad? So I've never read any of his work. I was never compelled to read any of his work. So.
Well, it's really good, but I will have to admit, like, a fair warning is it's basically all poetry. It's not like a fully written out stories.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of it only through like pop culture osmosis, you know what I mean? Just stuff that I've seen other people rip off. So
he's like very popular. I think the only other person to ever be more popular. I feel like Edgar Allan Poe was the like the Stephen King of his time when it came to like horror stuff.
Hmm.
And then somebody
the
like
Dean Koontz of his time.
And then somebody like H.P. Lovecraft came around and was equally as popular for being super fucked up, but he was more like the Roger Corman of his time.
Okay, yeah, okay. All right. So if people don't know, Two Evil Eyes is a...
bad movie, right?
it's two adaptations of Edgar Allan's work that I'm unfamiliar with, directed by two masters of horror, George A. Romero and Dario Argento. And so this isn't necessarily good Romero or Argento. This is 1990 Romero or Argento, where like maybe their best days were behind them. So
yeah.
In all honesty, John, what did you really think of this movie?
It was boring. It was bad. I don't know. It was like such a... like if you told me that this was supposed to be like a couple of Tales from the Crypt episodes or like Idle Arguments episodes, I would have been like, oh, okay, it was fine.
Right.
But since it's supposed to be like a feature-length film, I was like... Mm-hmm. Which also, I understood that it had two directors. What I was not clear about was that it was two separate stories.
So just go direct.
So like an hour in of the first story, I was like, oh my god, how much are they gonna add to this fucking story? Like, it should end soon, but I know there's still an hour left in this movie.
Right, yeah.
And then we finally get some fucking Tom Atkins in there, and I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, now we're talking. And then he immediately dies, and I'm like, how are you gonna do Tom Atkins like that?
Yeah, the Skeleton America's, Boy's favorite. Yeah.
America's most handsome man on earth, according to every movie.
Fuck boy, Tom Atkins, yeah.
Yeah. But then the movie that it ended, and I was like, wait, what? Then the next one started, because I was like, wait, what was Harvey Keitel? Like, what the fuck happened? And then the next story started, and I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, we can kind of break this up into mini reviews, right, of each segment if you'd like.
So the first one, the only good thing about it was Adrian Barbeau.
The only good thing is Barbeau. I think so. I mean, it's kind of essentially about a sort of trophy wife who tries to collect on her rich husband she doesn't love. And right, is having an affair.
Yeah,
she's having an affair with the doctor who is hypnotizing, zombifying the rich man to be ill and to basically convince him to sign over all his money. right?
Yeah.
Kind of it.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It was okay. I mean, had some good actors, but like the story was rather slow and predictable.
Like
poor dialogue. Yeah, not much happened.
The dude who plays the husband, the dead old man.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming he never got any words for acting.
Let me prove you wrong. Yeah. You're saying a guy named Bingo O'Malley, he's not going to win any awards.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's really cool. I think the only thing that was really cool is that like they had Romero favorites or like Carpenter favorites too. Like E.G. Marshall was in it and like Adrian Barbeau was in it. Tom Atkins.
One of my forever crushes.
Mm-hmm. And is she still alive? I think she passed, bro.
No, she's alive.
She's alive? I thought she passed.
No, she's still alive. How dare you? How dare you assume that Miss June 11th, 1945 has passed away?
Oh, she was just on the episode of 911. How awful of me. I confuse it with John Carpenter's producing partner passed away.
Yeah, what's her name that, in my opinion, is the reason Halloween happened. What's her name?
Right. I just
she wrote like a lot of the script, right?
The first one, yeah, and then helped produce a lot of like important Carpenter movies after they broke up or divorced or something. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this was, it's just like one thing that both these segments have issues with is that
Deborah Hill.
That's what it was. Oh, fuck. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Is it too long? Like, even though this movie's like 2 hours, easily could have been an hour and a half. This movie could have been an hour and a half.
You could cut, I would say just an hour. I don't
15
think,
like, minutes off both segments.
Yeah. Like, seriously, there was no reason. They could have each been 30 minutes long. It was like so much fluff put in to make them longer. And you could tell it kind of felt like they shot the movie and then they went in and did like added scenes to make them a little bit longer. I'm like, that's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first one had like such a corny, like, I don't think I've ever seen a Romero thing where it was like supernatural work out all that well. It was sick, except for Creepshow. Creepshow was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at one point, like, Adrian Barbeau dies because she gets like quote unquote pushed off a balcony by her dead husband, who is now dead bodies possessed by
sort of vessel.
Something like Legion, right? Where there are many.
Right. Yeah.
And then he disappears forever. and then the cheating doctor boyfriend is like passed out in his bed having like a nightmare. And the thing that he was using to hypnotize the husband with, which is kind of like a weird metronome,
mm-hmm.
starts to float up in the air and fucking stabs him in the chest.
Yeah. I'm gets like, at the worst.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe he was never awake for it, so he just kind of died.
And then, like, some, you know, they have the classic symbolicness of the money flying in the air. He lost all the money.
Well, also, so,
not subtle at all.
Classic move for somebody that's just collected a bunch of money, just has all the money laying around.
Romero is absurd. Yeah, Romero's had these issues, right? Because, like, it's clearly his significance cannot be overstated, right? Like, to the horror genre and to film in general and what he was able to do with Dead series.
To his commentary on, like, racism and stuff like that, too, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's to bring those things up and to bring them to effect. Classism, yeah. After everything after that gets a little spotty, right? I mean, it's a little rough.
You run out of ideas, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we all do, right? Everybody kind of runs out of stuff to say.
I will say, Well, it's just him going back to form, though, so I guess it's nothing, like, innovative, but, like, Land of the Dead was really good.
Land of the Dead feels like his last great effort in that particular genre.
Yeah, because he did a couple of, Diary of the Dead, which was probably a fraction of that budget, so it was really bad.
Mm-hmm, right. But famously, according to him, he was writing so many scripts on spec that he was like more rich than he ever was at this point. But nothing was getting produced. But he was making like he famously had written like Silent Hill adaptation, like for the video game, and then Resident Evil. He also did a pass on that, and he was just like making a lot of money because he was like, cause I guess he's attaching his name to a known horror franchises and stuff. Yeah. And so he was like, according to him, he was making like tons of money at this time. So he was like not like hurting, but nothing was getting produced. Nothing was getting made, was part of his frustration. And according to IMDb, they did say that this was supposed to be a TV show because it shot like a TV show. His segment in particular is shot like a Tales from the Dark Side. Amazing story type.
Which I gotta admit, yeah, I mean, even the cover of the thing looks exactly like the two shows you just mentioned. It looks like a hybrid of those two shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, if I saw this on TV and I saw this episode, I'd be like, oh, that was okay. And then I'd be like, I'm gonna give it one more shot. And if the next episode was the one that we're gonna talk about in a minute, I'd be like, I think I'm good. I think I'm done. I don't need to watch anything else.
I feel like the most to say is the second one, only because, you know, Argento is just like, it's no subtlety to his filmmaking.
Oh, because he's got like a bestiality fetish thing, or?
Oh, man.
He wants to do like snuff films, but with animals.
Pretty much, yeah.
With Harvey Keitel, the obvious artist. I don't know if you knew that. If
he's obviously
sure,
Argento.
He's the stand-in.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't know if anybody's seen Argento pictures. He has fucking berets, like, crazy. And all his, at periods of his, like, production stills of some of his movies, he's always wearing, like, a fucking beret. So, clearly, Harvey Keitel was trying to be the director.
The first segment, aside from the dead husband, which, understandably, the acting was kind of funny. That's like, I mean, how do you portray what he was supposed to do, I guess?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
A walking dead corpse, like a frozen one.
Right.
But the second one was like so outlandish, and Harvey Keitel, you could tell, was like trying to, and I think I mentioned this to you last night, where it's like trying to act his fucking heart out, and then it's just like way too much. He's like, I'm drunk. I'm like, well, yeah, we get it.
I'm going to have a spicy take here and say Harvey Keitel's never really been a good actor. so I'm going to say that. Think about it. I mean, he's been a part of a lot of famous movies, but has he ever really been good at all of them? Think about it. I'm just saying.
All right. You're going to tell me he wasn't good in From Dusk Till Dawn? The meek dad, ex-pastor, lost his faith.
I don't even remember him. I'm not saying that like he's like a bad actor consistently that constantly works. I'm just saying that there's more bad performances than there are good performances.
Yeah, that's fair. It's, I mean, I feel like, and during this time, it was always between him and, what's his name? Baby's Day Out and, that's Harvey Keitel, isn't it? Well, let us know in the comments down below if Harvey Keitel was in Baby's Day Out. Joe Mantegna. Antonia. You know, Tobar,
yeah, yeah. He's the poor man's Harvey Keitel, yeah. Is he talking about, yeah.
Which, I mean, kinda. He's been in, like, way bigger movies. It's just, we, like, don't really talk about him often. I mean, Harvey Keitel wasn't in The Godfather. Let's put it that way.
No, he was not.
No, I was right. Joe Montana was in Baby's Day Out. So, I mean, the only real takeaway I get from the second segment of Two Evil Eyes is he does this weird, he kills a cat because the cat's mean to him. Okay. And it's like,
yeah,
his girlfriend or what, I'm not sure, I think, yeah, his girlfriend, he mentioned that like 1,000 fucking times, not his girlfriend, is like, yeah, and look at his little white spot on his chest, and I was like, why are we pointing this out, who cares, just make the cat black, like, but like they pointed out in this one cat, and I guess like that was the most docile cat, because you clearly can tell that they put like paint or like, you know, something to paint that part of the chest white, because most of it was gone. And then when he finds a different cat, that cat's chest is like way wider. I don't know. But
I think
that makes an appearance, which I thought was really fun.
I kind of want to say, like, I slightly disagree only about Harvey Keitel's performance. I was kind of not a fan of it. I kind of felt like he needed more direction, to be honest. And I think that falls on Argento.
We're agreeing. I thought he was terrible. So I'm saying I thought he overacted.
Okay. I took it as if you were saying like he was super trying, but
I am saying that. I'm not saying he succeeded. Like, I'm saying he was trying way too hard.
Trying to make it good. Yeah. Yeah,
way too hard to make
because
it.
Because
gritty, like nothing like an artist would.
But. Yeah, because the material sucks. It's like he's like mad at a cat. It's like, dude, yeah. Like. Yeah, a lot of that didn't really fly.
Takes a bunch of photos of it, like a creepy snuff film, and
yeah, it's kind of hard to take any of that seriously. And it's mainly, it really is. I don't know if people think we're exaggerating. No, he gets his girlfriend, takes a stray in, and Harvey Keitel gets very jealous. It's like, why are you spending so much time with it? Why are you paying attention to me? Why are you always feeding it? Or something like along those lines, right? And
then and, the cat's super mean to him.
Yeah, I wonder why. Yeah, and then like he like fucking kills it, and then like it turns into some sort of supernatural thing. So I thought this was going to be like he gets scratched and turns into a cat or something. That's what I thought this was going.
That's my guess too, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
But he's also... his profession is he goes to crime scenes and takes photos of the crime scene, which I thought was to hand in for evidence.
Right.
Instead, he's got to deal with John Amos, where he takes these photos, and then he like published a book that included all these like graphic photos, which is super illegal. And then decided to include his like snuff photo session with him choking the cat to death.
Mm-hmm.
One of the cats, one of the three cats that he kills in this fucking short.
He kills quite a few cats. Yeah. Yeah.
And then on top of all that, especially with the ending, which I know is, I think, is that the Telltale Heart story, I think, where, yeah, a lover buries another lover in the walls, and they can hear that person speaking through the walls, and eventually goes insane and tears down the wall, and then there was an animal in there, because accidentally walled in the animal. Anyway, in between all that and even that weird ending where like the animals were still alive moving around just hairless for reasons, there's a dream sequence scene that goes on for way too long.
Yeah, there is a dream sequence scene where he goes back to
medieval times.
yeah, and he gets hung or something, sacrificed, like it was all over the place, the tone,
because it's like a village and he's just kind of wandering around casually because he's drunk. And the villagers kind of bring his girlfriend over, and she is clearly like a witch, is the idea. And the dead cat is in her arms, and then the cat's alive, and she's like, "Tell us who killed you." And the cat just kind of looks in his direction, not really like points out. It would have been funnier if like a little paw just points directly at him. But they're like, oh, okay, so they decide to hang him for killing the cat. Because people in that era...
Seems fair.
History, they're like, oh, how dare you kill the cat? Even though we killed several cats because we thought they were witches, but this is reverse of that time, so...
Yeah.
You get to die, drunkard.
Yeah.
Then he wakes up and breaks the bottle of booze because he was sleeping on the couch. All this is happening. The girlfriend's freaking out, calls her rich uncle or dad or whatever, and says, I need to get out of there. I'm scared.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, just running away, she goes back to the house and waits it out. So, of course, Harvey Keitel fucking kills her, too.
Harvey he just Keitel starts killing everybody.
Yeah,
that's
on a killing rampage.
It's just, yeah.
And how does he die?
He gets hung out. He ends up hanging himself as per his dream flash time travel sequence with a cop friend or something. He hangs himself outside a window.
Oh, that's right. The neighbors or the rich uncle or whatever that keeps like randomly knocking on the door and breaks through the window, which is all like...
Yeah.
I don't know why that upset me too. I don't know. Like they rightfully so doing the right thing, but the way the angry whatever he was doing everything, I would have fucking beat the shit out of him too. I don't know. It was just annoying. He's trying to sneak out the window and he's like handcuffed to John Amos, right?
Yeah.
Which like John Amos is like a large guy. He's just like a muscular, looks like a fucking football player.
Mm-hmm.
He is handcuffed to him and he's trying to like break the window and jump out the window. I wasn't sure what the plan was here. You know, like he breaks the window, he brings the body up to the ledge, and I'm like, what is his plan here? There was no clear plan. I don't understand what he thought he was going to do. Was he expecting the weight of John Amos to just rip his hand off and he wouldn't have to worry about the handcuffs anymore? Was he going to throw John Amos with his super strength into the trees to anchor himself and he can like hang off of it? Or I don't know. Anyway, something gets caught and it strangles him and he hangs.
Yeah.
Didn't understand that part of the movie. That's where everything like it didn't make sense. And then it like was like, oh, okay, I checked out.
Yeah. Yeah. I checked out much sooner. Yeah. This is the problem with these shorts. They go on fucking forever, man. And they just go on and on. And just especially this one, because it's like, what weird turn? There's like eight different turns in terms of like the story they're trying to tell.
And then just like too much like violence towards cats, like killing the cat on screen. I'm like, I don't need to have these confusing boners anymore. This short can end right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't keep like lubing up and like going and
just for you to end it and then go back in time. I hate time travel.
Yeah, time travel is turn off. But I got much to say, and we spoiled everything, so there will be no spoiler section on this episode. So
spoiler alert. There you go. Cue the spoiler alert. It's boring as what's
funny. Boring as fuck, yeah. not that great. Not that great of a movie. Before you rate it, John, do you have any other last thoughts?
No.
Just gotta be Argento's kind of like a lot of his stuff is so hard to get through. It's not good, but is that a spicy take?
No, not really. He's lost all the cool artsy shit that he did back in like the 70s, you know, in the 80s, where it's just like, fantastic to watch. Even if the story's a little boring, you're like, whoa, this is like visually stunning. And this was not at all. any of that.
I told you, right? I did see a little bit of his newest movie and then fell asleep. What was it?
The one about the sunglasses?
Yeah, was it? Yeah, something sunglasses.
I don't remember. Was it called Deep Red? Just kidding, guys. Dark Glasses.
Dark Glasses.
Or Occhiali Neri.
Yeah. Tour of Italy. Breadsticks. Salad. I don't know.
But let us know in the comments below if you want us to review his other movie that he did back in 2009 called Giallo, starring Adrian Brody.
Oh.
4.4 out of 10 stars on IMDb.
That's in the Skeleton Boys wheelhouse. That's going to the range for which we watch movies. That's an acceptable low amount. So we can watch. We could put that in the maybe pile.
Come on, yeah, so. go and let us know in the comments below on our thread account what other awful crap you want us to watch. And
please tell us, yeah. Clearly, we have no skill.
The critically acclaimed masterpiece, Russell Crowe's The Pope's Exorcist, let us know in the comments below.
We're going to have to probably take a vote on that one because I want to see yay or nay on how many...
We're going to put a poll on Instagram soon. Let us know.
Yeah. We just let it run for 3 weeks and they're going to get back to us. 3 weeks, we'll find out. Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
Rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Two Shitty Eyes 2 Sexy Spooky Bones. Because there's 2 segments, so I give them each a star. I give these 2 legendary directors each a star.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna say the same too. Sounds about right. I can't give it a 3 because if I say 3, it's going to sound like I like it more than you, which I didn't. So I more or less have to be.
And 3 is often close to 4, which would be kind of a compliment.
Kind of a 5, which is in the middle, which means that it's okay. Too close to 5. Yeah. Too close to being okay.
Can't give it 1 because Adrian Barbeau and John Amos are in it. Oh, and Tom Atkins, you know. Skeleton Boys.
Yeah. Favorite.
Handsome fuck boy in America, Tom Atkins.
Yeah. Taking over the nation, Tom Atkins. Hide your daughters. Tom Atkins is coming. Yeah, I'll give it 2 sexy spooky bones. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Thank you.